For SearchSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for December 20th, 2006. In this edition, we'll talk to Burton Group Senior Vice President Dan Blum about the state of malware threats headed into 2007. Dan talks about the growing sophistication of malware and gives strategies to protect your company from them. Also, Mozilla released fixes to Firefox. Mozilla released a security update this week. The update patches several flaws attackers could exploit in Firefox, SeaMonkey, and Thunderbird. If exploited, attackers could bypass security programs, access sensitive information, and launch cross-site scripting attacks, or take complete control of a targeted machine. Mozilla urged users to upgrade to Firefox versions 1.5.0.9, or for those who recently upgraded to Firefox 2.0, upgrade to 2.0.0.1. Next, my interview with Burton Group Senior Vice President Dan Blum. But first, these messages.
Are you struggling to control the many aspects of messaging security in your enterprise? Keeping tabs on email security, instant messaging security, and mobile device security is a challenge for every InfoSec pro. But SearchSecurity.com's Messaging Security School is here to help. Each on-demand lesson is packed with tools and tactics to help you develop and implement an effective messaging defense strategy. Learn essential practices for securing mobile devices, study countermeasures for malicious email code, and gain the keys to safeguard instant messaging. Start your coursework today at searchsecurity.com/messaging. That's searchsecurity.com/messaging.
And we're back. With me on the line is Dan Blum. He is the Senior Vice President and Research Director at the Burton Group. Now, the Burton Group just released a three-part research series to help enterprises build a full, what they call a full-spectrum defense against malware. Dan is going to talk today a little bit about malware creation and how it's becoming more sophisticated, as well as the underground cybercrime industry. And, among other things, what exactly is a full-spectrum defense? Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You said in your report that malware creation has become more automated. Is it getting more sophisticated, or is there just more of it?
It's both. It's both getting more sophisticated, and it's getting more automated, and there's more criminals out there, and they've got more computers under their control to generate more attacks. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a combination of all those things. Malware creation has evolved from a hobby into an underground cybercrime industry. So we have more resources and tools than ever working on the dark side, and they're creating everything from more sophisticated vulnerability finders and exploit generators to modular attack construction kits, tools that do botnet control. They've localized the malware so that you have phishing as a second language, not just in English anymore. There's intelligence gathering through Google, and infrastructures available for anonymity and money laundering and other tools of the trade. Some real important facts that people should know is that a lot of the attacks now are targeted at particular individuals, knowing something about the individuals. One of my friends, for example, has a son that's a guitar teacher, and he was subjected to a phishing exploit from a Nigerian who picked up his ad on the web and was working through email to basically do check fraud against him.
It seems like it's like a broken record. Every year we're hearing that things are these guys are getting more sophisticated, and we're just going to get more and more targeted attacks.
Yeah, we are, but at the same time, we're getting more sophisticated at defense.
Okay.
And the sky is not falling. Certainly, we're not doing a particularly good job at containing the problem, but nonetheless, people still go out and buy Christmas presents on Amazon.com or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
We still shop online every year. Somebody says that maybe consumers will lose trust in the Internet because of all the attacks and so forth, but that's never happened. So it seems to me that this is just sort of part of life. It's part of the economy. You always have the more there is value, the more it attracts crime, and we just need to get better at defending against it. And you know, we have uneven results at this point.
You predict in your report that every IT environment, including endpoint security components, won't be immune to malware attacks moving forward. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, what changed that opened those components to attack?
Well, the point is, Rob, that nothing's changed. Malware is always pretty much attacked everything.
Okay.
The only there's two factors here. How widely is the programming environment or IT environment used, and therefore how much value is there, or how much notoriety could you get by attacking it? And then the other factor is how easy is it to attack? So the attackers, like everybody else, will try to put forward the least effort for the most reward, and they'll go after any environment, particularly if it becomes popular. So starting with the brain virus for DOS, the Moore swarm for Unix, concept virus for Word macros, mm-hmm. up through Code Red, Nimda, MyDoom, Slapper on Linux, the others were on Windows. We've had exploits on mobile phones, and most recently worms spread through social networking environments like Second Life and MySpace.com. So it's sort of wherever people are, whatever environments are in use, malware is going to attack it. Now the question is, can it get in? Because the other part of the equation is, how easy mm-hmm. is it to get in? Well, clearly, before Windows XP SP2, operating systems or endpoints were quite easy to penetrate. It's gotten a bit harder with Microsoft's focus on security and other vendors focusing on security. So we're seeing most of the attacks go up the stack towards web applications and web browsers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have to, they'll come back down and attack the base operating system. And the reason that there's always an opportunity is that when you have programs with millions of lines of code, the vulnerabilities are there. And you can firewall things off, but then when you want to provide utility, you have to open holes in the personal firewall or the network firewall, and there's an opportunity for an exploit there. And those are just the vulnerability-dependent exploits. The other types of exploits are user-dependent exploits, where you trick the user into opening the door to his impregnable fortress, right? And there you go. The mm-hmm. virus is loose.
Now, you mentioned Microsoft's focus on security. Do you think Vista will have any effect on limiting malware attacks?
I think it continues the trend towards improving the OS level security,
mm-hmm.
and continues the trend towards the malware attacks targeting the applications that run on top of the operating system. So so it won't have much effect on those applications until the developers start using some of the features of Vista, like user account control and low integrity mode in the Internet Explorer 7, for example. But if they start doing that, then they definitely raise the bar for the attackers. But they're not stationary either. It's kind of a non-stationary problem in the sense that the attackers are improving their tools. So maybe even if there's a lower bug density, maybe their tools get better at finding the bugs that are there. I think as long as there's a motivation to conduct the attacks and the same tools can be used to create new kinds of attacks, and they'll go after whatever environment has the value that they want.
I know I'm jumping all over the place here, but you also mentioned mobile devices. And is that an area the IT department should really be looking at this point?
Yes, they should. It's at least a medium priority, and maybe a higher priority if your employees in sensitive positions are using BlackBerries, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Those BlackBerries may contain emails that have sensitive information, regulated information that may be of value to someone to steal that. And as these mobile devices get smarter, they become more vulnerable both to the vulnerability-dependent and the user-dependent exploits.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to talk a little bit about, you mentioned the cybercrime industry. How much research has been conducted on it, and do we really know enough about the cybercrime industry? Do the security vendors know enough about it? Where are these guys learning these skills and becoming more sophisticated?
Well, the vendors are researching the cybercrime industry, as are the various law enforcement agencies. And some of the vendors have published reports where they Symantec had one report where they actually transcribed some of the chats they were seeing on the IRC relays. Mm. So you can read that, and it's quite fascinating. You know, these are, you know, in these chats, they were really some, you know, fairly low life people trading credit cards and trading passwords to compromised roots, as they called them, which were servers that they'd compromised. And that kind of, you know, brings about the point that the whole cybercrime underground economy has become sort of vertically integrated. And we know that there's vulnerability finding tools for sale. There's modular attack kits and exploit generators for sale. Some of these things are even open source projects, which have quality control, kind of like other open source projects on the good side. So we know a lot about it. At the same time, the vendors, they're not actually law enforcement people. They they can't, if they try and pull a sting operation or something, they would be opening themselves up to liability. So there's only so deep they can go. And you know, you were asking also, I think, whether there was anything that organizations could do in terms of law enforcement, or whether it was just about putting in place a strong defense.
Right.
And it seems to me that putting in place a strong defense is the most important thing. If I'm walking around in the city, it's great to know that we've got a good police department, but I still have to keep my eyes open and not go down the dark alleys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of law enforcement, though, it's an international problem. There was the Council of Europe's Convention on Cybercrime, which through which many nations have tried to harmonize the way they create laws covering computer crime. But we still need to do a lot to improve law enforcement, from everything from surveillance to forensics and deterrence. I think one very promising approach is to follow the money. And, for example, there were some recent raids on eGold, which was digital currency that a lot of the criminals were using, and hopefully this can sort of disrupt them for a while. But they're going to go to another means of exchange. So it's kind of an ongoing battle. In terms of what organizations can do, you know, just recognizing that improving international law enforcement is going to be a very slow process, you need to factor law enforcement into your incident response. Know when and how to deal with law enforcement as you have incidents occur. And I think also that information sharing is pretty important if you do get involved with politicians and crime fighters that are trying to deter, prevent, and investigate cybercrime. Mm-hmm. You can not only get some valuable knowledge and make a difference, but you also get some connections and maybe have some favors to call on later when an incident happens to you.
I'm going to jump back to your report, and one of the things I got out of it was that you favor small versus big vendors. Am I understanding that correctly? Can you explain that?
It's sort of a paradox in our industry where we sort of see small is beautiful, but bigger is better. How can they both be true at the same time? When you look at the test results, it's not really a matter of me favoring small vendors or big vendors, because we're vendor neutral.
Right.
But I just looked at the test results, all of the anti-malware tests that had been done in late 2005 and 2006. And often you saw smaller vendors coming out on top. So why was that? Maybe they're more innovative, quicker to jump on advanced heuristics and styles of protection that the other vendors take longer to design their products to provide. Also, we know that the malware authors test against the major vendors like Symantec and McAfee. So they're less likely to test against a small vendor like ESET or, mm-hmm. or something like that. So that might maybe helping them a bit as well. So the nimble factor, the obscurity factor is helping the smaller vendor. But on the other hand, the larger vendors are creating unified security suites. They're integrating network admission control, vulnerability management, security event information management, and other control layer technologies with malware defense. So I think you want to look to use some of the larger vendors to put some big pieces of the puzzle in place, but then fill in the gaps with some of the smaller solution and keep your defense diversified so that you don't have a single point of failure anywhere.
And that's something that's not a new approach, right? That is something that a lot of enterprises are taking.
I would say so. I think that that would be generally the best practice. Sometimes, however, enterprises err towards too much integration, too much dependence on a single vendor, or on the other hand, an overly brittle best-of-breed architecture with too many moving parts. So,
and that brings us to what you call a full-spectrum defense. Can you explain that a little bit and what it means and, you know, how difficult is it to deploy?
Well, we came up with the term full-spectrum defense because we wanted to indicate that it wasn't just about layered defense or defense in depth. It's not just a technology problem. In fact, layered defenses are kind of failing to contain the problem mm-hmm. because if you have a targeted attack, it's previously unseen malware. What good does your layered defense do if you scanned it at the web, you scanned it at the network, you scanned it at the endpoint, and it still got through?
Mm-hmm.
So full spectrum defense is a term that we use that means defense in depth plus defense in breadth. And it's intended to be considered along with a methodology we've created at Burton Group called the Systematic Comprehensive Approach to Information Security that not only looks at the technology model, and we have some very sophisticated technology models, but we also look at some unconventional weapons like involving the user, for example. The vendors that are selling anti-malware tools like to make fun of the user. Well, the user's never going to be able to figure this out. You know, they're stupid and lazy and so forth. But in fact, if you can get the user to be 50% effective against previously unseen malware, then you're having the user at a level that's about as good as the products.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take advantage of that, even though it may not be the whole solution? It's one more layer of defense. Another one is web filtering, I think, is a purely technology solution, but it invokes some other factors of detection that you don't have in the signature-based scan. Those vendors look at URL reputation databases, and since so many attacks are coming through malicious websites, that's an important layer to put in. In terms of the breadth of defense, I mentioned information sharing was very important, not just with law enforcement, though, but with other companies through information sharing organizations like I4 or ISACA or whoever. One of our customers is a large manufacturing company, and they have a woman who's a well-known virus researcher in her own right, but she works for this manufacturing company. And because of her contacts, a vendor that her company wasn't even using called her up to tell her that they'd seen a piece of malware that was targeting her company. So, you know, that kind of information sharing reaps dividends. Also, in terms of managing partners so that they don't allow their users to come onto your network with completely unmanaged machines and things like that, managing your outsourcing partners, this is all an example of breadth of defense that's very important.
This is an overall strategy that you're buying into then?
Yes. And I think you also wanted to know how costly it was.
Yeah. And I guess it's really difficult to put a finger on cost when we're talking about a strategy.
Well, we can talk about whether a strategy tends to raise costs or lower costs. And this kind of strategy is going to raise the costs of your security program, but it's going to lower the costs of incidents that occur. So it's kind of good news, bad news in terms of the costs that it creates. Everything costs money. For example, the researcher I was talking about, I'm sure she's not cheap, so you know they had to pay for that. But when you look at all the things I was talking about in the full spectrum defense, a lot of it is not just about protecting the organization against malware. It's protecting against insider threats as well as external threats. It's protecting against things that could go wrong. One thing I didn't mention in the full spectrum defense was the importance of being proactive. And I don't just mean buying host intrusion prevention software that can detect exploits even if there's no signature. That's great to have those, but I'm also just talking about hardening your environment so that you're not always reacting to incidents, but you're making it much more difficult for the incidents to occur. So, for example, if you have locked down desktops, then those are much less susceptible to malware. Now, the cost of that is you're reducing the user's flexibility, but if you build software distribution systems and workflows to go into that, then the user can still get the software installed that they need. Or maybe it's just a matter of training the users not to run in an account that has administrative privileges except when they're installing something. Those things all are examples of being proactive, kind of hardening your environment before you have incidents rather than always trying to react and clean up incidents at the endpoints.
Right.
And so if you have that kind of environment, you're going to find that your IT systems are more reliable and they're more defendable, and you're protected against threats in addition to malware, and you're also more likely to be able to comply with regulations.
And that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can always check out the latest security news and information at certsecurity.com/news. And our audio archive is at certsecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.